in life and in leadership and at work, it's much easier to do what you see than what you hear. And the fact of the matter is, leadership is best defined as relational influence. And we have a crisis today in the workplace because there are plenty of people who will tell you what to do and not a lot of people that'll show you. Can any of y'all relate to that? Anybody got a job where there's somebody telling you what to do and they don't know how? Thank you. Thank you. So today I want to talk to you about leading your work. The verse I want to focus on, the main text, is Colossians 3:23, which says, "Whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men." I want to talk today about the motivation of leading at work, the method of leading at work, and the aftermath of leading at work. But guys, if I'm honest with you, I feel totally inadequate to be up here today. Not just because my mouth's messed up, but because many of you guys are CEOs. Many of you guys have started your own business. Many of you have started many businesses. I even know a friend here who's a lieutenant in the Dallas Police Department. Many of you have led incredibly well for many years in your jobs. You should be up here. Frankly, that's the reality, is you should be up here. But God had so much to teach me as I got to prepare for this talk. One thing being that leadership is best defined as relational influence. Here's where I missed it, guys. You do not need to be at the top to lead. Leadership starts where you are with you. But I would be amiss if I got up here, guys, and told you just tips and tricks of how to lead better at work if you do not know the point and power, as Josh taught on the first week. Then you will have the wrong motivation, which will lead to the wrong method and will leave an aftermath of destruction. If you don't hear anything else from me today, hear this: that unless you go to the source, you'll never get the supply. If you want to lead others, you have to come under the leadership of Jesus Christ. He is the source, and He alone is the supply. He will give you everything you need to be the leader that He created you to be. So first, let's talk about the motivation of leading at work. Let's look at Colossians 3:22. If you got your Bible, you can turn there. If you don't, you can look at the screen or your book. But it says this: "Bondservants, obey in everything those who are your earthly masters, not by way of eye service, as people pleasers, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. Whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive an inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ, for the wrongdoer will be paid back for the wrong he has done, and there is no partiality. Masters, treat your bondservants justly and fairly, knowing that you have a master in heaven." Hey guys, I don't know if y'all caught this, but note the word bondservant here. It's shown in the side of your book that it's not exactly a slave, and it's similar to the modern employee today. And typically, this person had accumulated a lot of debt, so much so that he could not pay it, so he had to work it off. Sound familiar? Student loan crisis? For most of these men, they would find themselves in a very difficult circumstance. Quite often, it wasn't fair. Note that Paul says that the wrongdoer will be paid back. Hey guys, I don't know where you find yourself with work today. You might find yourself in a place that's frankly not fair. But surely, wherever you are, as work relates to you, it's not as bad as these guys had it. So what does that tell me? This is what it tells me. Your circumstance at work shouldn't dictate your attitude. But so often we let it. So often I let it. We think that if we had a better boss, a nicer workplace, then we would be better leaders and have more of an impact at work. That is a lie. Imagine Paul is writing here to bondservants who had terrible circumstances, that they are to work for the Lord. Who do you work for? Who? Let me ask you this question here. Who are they supposed to be working for? Come on, help me out. Who are they supposed to be working for? The Lord. So here's my point. Know the who before the do. Know the who before the do. I know that's a tongue twister. Some of y'all looking at me crazy right now. So let's talk about the who. Guys, what's your motivation for work? Here's the reality. Money cannot be your motivation. Why? Because it's never enough. Let me just ask you, if you put a number in your mind, you said, oh, if I just made this much money, then I'd be happy. Yeah, let me tell you, I don't know much about what Biggie Small said, but he was right. More money, more problems. Ecclesiastes 5:10 says this, he who loves money will never be satisfied with money, nor he who loves wealth with his income. This is also vanity. Man, I feel like we need to hear that every day living in this culture. Money will never satisfy us. Remember, he owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. That means God owns everything. Everything is his. He is the one who gives you the ability to produce wealth, according to Deuteronomy 8. And I've heard it said, and I think it's true, that if your self-worth is tied to your net worth, then a recession can cause a depression. I know some of y'all are a little slow this morning. But that's the reality, guys. Money cannot be your motivation. Why? Because Jesus said men can't serve two masters. You either love the one, hate the other. You can't do both. So guys, Jesus is your provider. Money may pay the bills, but Jesus is the one who gives you the ability to make that money. Don't forget that. Money cannot be your motivation. Men cannot be your motivation. Note what Paul says here. He says, not as way as eye service, as people pleasers. But guys, I like getting the approval of man. If I'm honest, this is tough for me. In my career, I have to have people to like me. If they don't, I'm out of business. They have to like me. But I feel like the Lord has had to grow me here. Here's the reality for me, guys. I cannot live to please other people. If I let their opinions define me, then I will constantly live in a place of not feeling good enough. You ever felt not good enough? It's not a good feeling. Galatians 1:10 says, for am I now seeking the approval of man or of God? Or am I trying to please man? If I were still trying to please man, I would not be a servant of Christ. Man, I want to be a servant of Christ, not a slave to man's opinions of me. If you live for their approval, you'll die by their rejection. I must live for the approval of one. Men cannot be your motivation. My master's opinion of me is all that matters. So the point of this is the master must be your motivation. He is the who before you do. He is the why before you try. It is all about him. Note that Paul states here that we must work heartily for the Lord, knowing that he has an inheritance for us and a sure reward. That may mean, guys, that you live a life like this bondservant here, and you never see a reward in this life. That may mean that the circumstances you find yourself in at work are just frankly not fair. But that's not why you work. You don't work for that boss. You don't work for a paycheck. You work for Christ. And when you make the master your motivation, man, what a joy that is. How freeing that is. Guys, if your circumstance where you find yourself is all it will ever be, would you be okay with that? I want to be. Matthew 6:20 says, "But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and thieves do not break in and steal." Guys, I want to take God at his word that the treasures he has for us in heaven are way better than anything here on this earth. Anything. Man, that's hard to believe for me sometimes because it looks so good here. But God is always better. If we lose sight of this, guys, we'll constantly live in a land of frustration. We'll constantly be broken. And we'll lose our ability to have influence on others. Know who you work for. Remember, money can't be your motivation. Men can't be your motivation. The master must be why you lead at work. It has to be for a bigger purpose. Let's talk now. We talked about the motivation for leading at work. Let's talk now about the method of leading at work. I'm going to start off at Exodus 18. We're going to look at that section now. You see Moses. It says here, "The next day Moses sat to judge the people." That was Moses' job. And as we look at the method of leading at work, I want to focus in on Moses. He had a special call to lead on his life from his birth. Let me try to refresh your memory a little bit. He spent 40 years as a prince, 40 years as a shepherd, and 40 years as the leader of a nation of about 2 million Israelites wandering in the wilderness. Oh man, regardless of your circumstance, guys, that you find yourself in, it doesn't change God's call in your life to be a leader, to influence others for his glory. As a prince, Moses saw the injustice and tried to fix it with force. Y'all remember that story? He ended up running away as a murderer. Here's the truth in this, guys. Men, don't let your past failures determine your future leadership. Your failures don't define you. Moses then spent 40 years as a shepherd that prepared him for the 40 years of leading to the promised land. And here's the thing about Moses. He knew he was a leader and he tried to change things really quickly. And that's what led to murder. Y'all remember that story? And here's the problem with us. We often overestimate our ability in the short term while underestimating a lifetime of faithfulness. Guys, a lifetime of faithfulness is what prepared Moses to lead. Will you be faithful with where you are today? Regardless of where God has you, will you be faithful? If you're a shepherd watching over dumb sheep, you got dumb coworkers. I know some of y'all got dumb coworkers, but Moses had sheep. Was he faithful with where he was? Yes, and that opened up the door to lead 2 million people. Guys, I don't know if you saw this, but in page 33 of your workbook, go ahead and turn there. Page 33. This is gold, guys. This is absolute gold. It gives us many ways to apply directional leadership at your workplace. You know, here is a great, I know you studied this, but here is a great example of what it looks like to lead up, to lead out, and to lead down. Why? Because you're leading yourself. You're submitting to the authority of Christ. When you do this, guys, you're a leader that people want to follow. So, with that leadership component in your hand, I want to take you guys and look at Exodus 18 and what I see how leadership played out with Moses here. So to refresh your memory, Moses is spending all his day judging the people. He is worn out. Have any of y'all ever felt worn out? Have any of y'all ever felt like, man, my job just beats me down? It's taken all my energy. It's taken all my source of life. Have y'all ever felt that way? Am I just alone in this room? Come on, I know you felt that way. Moses felt worn out. And then what happens? His father-in-law, who happened to be his former boss, by the way, when he was a shepherd, comes to him and says, "Mo, you're running at a pace that's not sustainable. Mo, you're not able to do this alone. Mo, I will give you some advice." And you know what Moses does? He listens. He listens to his father-in-law. Note who's talking to Moses here. It's not his boss. It's his father-in-law. And he's telling him what he is doing wrong. I don't know about you guys, but first of all, as a man, I don't like when people tell me that I'm wrong. Secondly, I especially don't like to hear from my father-in-law. But what does Moses do? Moses listens to his father-in-law. That's what makes Moses such a tremendous leader, guys. Here's the truth. Humility looks good on everybody. Have you put on humility lately? Moses was humble. He listened to his father-in-law. Because here's the truth about a leader, guys. People would rather follow a leader that's always real than a leader that's always right. Let me say that again so you don't miss it. People would always love to follow a leader that's always real than a leader that's always right. Y'all seen those guys? You can't tell them anything, man. They're always right. You can never tell them they're wrong. That's not a leader. That's a dictator. But Moses put on humility. How are you doing at humbly listening and receiving feedback? I feel like that's one of the hardest things to do as a man. But how are you doing? Do you let people speak into your life? You know, Andy Stanley said it this way, and I think it's so true. A leader that doesn't listen is eventually surrounded by people who have nothing to say. Leadership starts with listening. What are you listening to? So Moses listens. He begins to delegate. In verse 21, he looks for able men from all the people. He looked for men who feared God, who were trustworthy, and who hated bribes. Guys, I think this has a great leadership lesson here in it for hiring. Look, Moses is trying to set up an organization here. He's hiring the right people. How did he hire? Did he hire based on how they're able to judge? No. He hired based on the values that they held. And I think for us, guys, we shouldn't hire for a skill set as much as a value set. You can teach skills, but values are ingrained. I would say, even so much more so, and some of y'all run businesses, I would say that character matters more than competency. You have to have a baseline of competency, absolutely. But if you got two guys and one's maybe a little less confident than the other, but he's got great character and the other guy you know doesn't, I would go with the man who has character over competency any day. Because values are ingrained. Skills can be taught. And values drive so much. Now let's look at what Moses delegated. Moses, notice this. Moses just didn't give people something to do. He gave them the authority to do it. There's a difference. Because when you delegate tasks, you create followers. But when you delegate authority, you create leaders. You want to empower people to lead, guys. You don't just want them to do the task that you don't want to do. So guys, as leaders, we should be obsessed with creating leaders. That's what Moses did. That's how he drove the organization. Because when you delegate, you build trust. And great organizations are built on trust. What do you need to delegate? Jesus, look at Jesus. He had 3 years of ministry. You know who he chose? He chose 12 rejects of society, 12 guys that nobody else wanted. He chose those guys and he said, hey, follow me. And in 3 years, he developed them. And then after that, he deployed them. And we're here standing talking about this today because of those guys. That's leadership. He delegated authority. And the world has never been the same since. Now, some of you guys will say to me, Matt, I believe the theory that if you want something done, you do it done right, you do it yourself. You ever heard of that? You ever said that? Yeah, I know I have. But guys, I would say the strength of your organization is not a reflection of what you control, but of who you empower. Guard the values and surrender control. If someone else can do it as half as good as you, but with upside momentum, I would say delegate it to them. We want to be focused on what only we can do. Moses was the only one that can meet with God. He was the only one that saw God face to face. He was the only father to his children. He was the only husband to his wife. Guys, as leaders, we need to focus on only what we can do. Delegate everything else. Create leaders. Empower men. That's what the strength of a leader is. Delegation is not weakness, it's strength. That's how you create leaders. Lastly, let's look at the culture Moses created here. 2 million people all bringing their problems to him. What does this say about what Moses valued? I mean, this is a recipe for burnout. But what does this say what Moses valued? Because culture is a product of what we value as leaders. You create the culture around you. You either create it or you allow it. It doesn't happen by accident. Culture is what you value. So Moses is saying here that he valued quality control, that he valued responsibility, that he valued that he was the only one that could make decisions. But it all changed when his father-in-law came to him, and Moses, he was encouraged to value creating leaders. Guys, that's when the lid came off. That's when the culture shifted. So here's my last question to you. What do you say your values, what do you say that at your work you value? What does your work say about what you value? How do you value, the way you live your life, how do you value? What do you value? Because a great leader values creating leaders. So guys, we've talked about the motivation of leading at work. We've talked about now the method of leading at work. Now I want to talk to you about the aftermath of leading at work. Ephesians 2:10, for we are his workmanship created in Christ Jesus to do good work, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. Guys, here's the reality. You are a leader regardless of your position in the organization. God has called you and equipped you to lead. You are his workmanship at work. When you work by the proper motivation, as though working for the Lord and not for men or money, and when you lead through wisdom in the method of how you lead, you get the aftermath of what God will do in your life. Your character and your competency will be the conduit of God's grace to others in your place of work. Man, think about it, guys. If let's just say you're normal, you work 40 hours a week. I doubt that. I bet most of y'all work more than that. But let's just say it's 40 hours a week. That's 2,000 hours a year. The reality is, work is about a third of your life. We're talking about a huge issue here, guys. About a third of your life is spent working. Where else in the world do you get a platform to engage with people you would otherwise never engage with? At work. At work. And how you do at your work gives you a platform to talk to them about why you work the way you work, your motivation. And when your motivation's properly aligned, you get to point to who the one that you follow is, who's your leader. Man, what a great platform. What a great opportunity. Guys, you are created for this. He has called you to this. He has prepared you for this work. It's not for money. It's not for men. It's for the master who is crazy about your life. He wants you to be a leader that creates leaders that influence the world. It starts with you. Are you ready? As I said at the beginning, guys, I would be amiss if I only gave you tips and tricks and you missed the point in power. You see, Jesus is the source of all good leadership. Some of y'all may not know him here. Some of y'all, I mean, I say Jesus and you're like, oh yeah, I've heard that name as a cuss word. That's all I've heard. And I'd love to talk to you about that. Your table leaders would love to talk to you about that. But the point is that he is the leader that you must follow if you want the supply of leadership. All of this is pointless if you miss the point. How are you doing at following Jesus? Do you know him? You see, he is the greatest example of a leader. So guys, we talked about the motivation, we talked about the method, and we talked about the aftermath. You know what that spells? M-M-A. It's a fight. It's a fight. My lip proves that. I got busted. I got 6 stitches in my mouth right now, and I'm up here talking because I sacrificed for the guys on my team. You know what that did? That gave me influence with them. That gave me authority to talk into their lives. And guys, this is a fight. If you want to be a leader at work, you got to fight for it. You got to say, I'm not serving money, and I'm not serving men. I'm serving the master. So guys, lead your work. God has you right where you are to be the leader that he has created you to be. Let's go.